This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Oh, look at this. Like the Gallagher brothers reunited again. Welcome back, everybody. Bennett Woods, 97.3 The Fan. I guess I'm welcoming myself. Now, welcome back, me. It's good to be home. That's all right, isn't it? It's so good to be back in the States, back in my chair, and back with my brothers, Benny and Paulie. Boys, good to see you. That's Paul Reindl, the executive producer of the show. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Man, I'm doing well. Jet lag like a mother blanker, man. Woo! It is a real, real thing. My legs feel like concrete right now, dude. To my left, what was that? Was that you? Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did.
I heard it was you. No, maybe it was
me.
Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. Good morning, Benjamin.
I was wondering if you'd come back with a slight accent. I think maybe just a tiny bit. I'm hearing it.
I've been fighting it. It's so infectious. The Mancunian accent is very, very infectious and very incredible. But man, it's so good to be home. Good to see you guys. How did everything go without me?
I went pretty smoothly.
Good.
We missed you, certainly, but...
We always say, we got through it.
Get through it. Yeah.
Got through it.
Well, I mean, we say that when we're together a lot of the times. It's like, we got through that one. Oh, it happens, man. But I had a... It was unbelievable. The trip I had was absolutely unbelievable. And I'll start this morning. I've got some gifts. Now, here's the bad news. They lost my luggage, British Airways.
Of course they did.
Lost my luggage coming home.
I thought they didn't lose first class luggage. Isn't there a special place in the plane that they put it and bring it right out to you, like on a separate card or system? There's a separate baggage claim for first class, no?
They should like do your laundry at the bottom of the plane while you're flying.
One would think, for what I paid for that ticket. I told my wife, and I go, look, this is a quote. I don't want to sound like a huge C word, but I feel like if you fly first class, they should have your baggage waiting for you. Yes, I feel like that should be the rules.
I am not going to disagree with you.
Paulie, if you saw my credit card bill, you'd go, I want my luggage, and I want it now.
So,
and it should be waiting when I... Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Woods. Here's your luggage. Enjoy customs. And I'm on my way.
If you got a 3 o'clock flight and you're flying first class, you're there at 1 o'clock. You make your way to the terminal.
Yeah.
You're waiting for them to start calling names or, you know, letting you board the plane. What's the first thing they say? First class passengers.
First guy on the plane.
Like, after people with special needs, if they have wheelchairs.
Yep.
Like after that, it's first class.
Yep.
You get to go on first. Why wouldn't you get to get off first and get your bag first?
Yeah, you would think there was a way to make it happen.
Did you have... Was there, like, a short layover between Manchester flying to London and then switching, obviously, to the big plane to fly to San Diego, and they didn't get it from one plane to the other in time?
I got no earthly idea, but I got to the airport yesterday, 6 a.m. for an 8:55 flight, and checked in, gave him my bag, said, checking through to San Diego. Yeah, of course. Yeah, no problem. I was the last guy, me and one other guy at the terminal yesterday after the 12-hour, 10-hour flight, whatever, waiting for the bag. Guy comes up, so sorry. I said, okay, so here's my number, here's my tag. I crumbled up my boarding pass with my number on it and shoved it in my pocket, thank God. So I gave it to him, but it has Paulie's presence in it. But I have your presence here.
Thanks.
So I'll just give you yours now to get this started. I got this for you on the streets of... On the streets of Manchester. It is a... It's a bucket hat. Oh, my head. I think I just had a stroke. Just a mini stroke. It's a bucket hat.
You can't even tell people on the radio what I'm wearing.
I can. Oh. I can describe it. It's a black bucket hat that has the C word all over it.
It's not even a high quality item.
No, it only cost me 10 pounds.
You overpaid.
Best 10 pounds. Oh, look at the top of it. The very top has one big bold C word on top of it. So there you go. Wear that in good health as you walk your dogs.
This can't be worn anywhere in this country. This can't be worn in this country.
That went better than I thought it was going to. Now, I have more gifts for you, but they're going to come at 8.
Oh, man, that's really funny.
At 8 o'clock, you get more gifts because I want to talk about English food at 8 o'clock. We'll talk, we'll do a whole segment about the food over in the UK, because I have many thoughts. But as a whole, the best way I can describe the United Kingdom is that the whole country is room temperature. Everywhere you go, everything and everywhere you go is room temperature. You walk outside, it's room temperature. You walk in your hotel, it's room temperature. The ice is room temperature.
Beer, it's room temperature.
The whole country is room temperature. There's always a thin layer of sweat on you everywhere you go. I cranked my AC in my hotel, my very expensive hotel. Cranked it down as far as it would go. Laying there. Next time I go, I'm taking a fan. I'm packing a big fan with me. The other thing they do. Have you been to Europe, Benny?
I have.
Paul, you've never been.
I have not.
They give you two key cards when you check in your hotel.
I don't remember this. It's been 20 plus years since I've been.
So they give you two. And one of them is for you on your person. The other one is for you to put in there's a little slot that you put in that will turn the lights on. You can't lights on.
I've seen that at a hotel before, yeah.
So they really are good about trying to conserve energy. It's smart, actually, the way that they do it. But I walked out of my hotel one night for dinner. It was about 5:45. I was meeting my buddy Craig for dinner. And I walked out into a hallway at 5:45 p.m. that was pitch black. And I mean pitch black. I was like, I looked at my watch. I went, because I had taken a nap. I went, did I sleep till 5:45 a.m.? Because it's black. And then when I walked in the hallway, some lights came on. So they're really good about conserving and, you know, everything else. They don't really like to give a lot of ice and stuff. You can't, it's hard to get ice in your drinks. You have to really ask for it. And when you do, they look at you like, oh, you're one of those. You're an American. Yeah, you're one of those that's on your bucket hat. So I'll say the trip was, you know, Ben said you were worried that I had built it up so much that I was going to be disappointed. I'm not disappointed. I had the time of my life. I had the greatest trip ever. It was so good to get home. I missed my kids and my wife and you guys so much. Oh, so much. And walking into the house yesterday, my little guys running up to me. It was the greatest. I was like weeping on the plane. I was so excited to see them. But the actual trip itself was legendary. It was truly legendary.
I'm so glad you had an amazing time. We talked yesterday. I was worried that with so much buildup and so much anticipation that perhaps it would feel a little disappointing when you were there, like the expectations, the reality couldn't possibly meet the expectations. So I'm really happy that you enjoyed yourself, that you got to see what you wanted to see. And it looked like the actual concert was amazing.
Benny, like it's as close to a religious experience at a show that I've ever had. And I've been to a lot of shows and I've had a lot of great times. And I've been to some really cool, I've had some cool experiences. I've been to many festivals and things like that. But I'm going to say this. Watching that band in their hometown with 80,000 people that were all there for one reason and one reason only, and that was to have the time of their life, was so special to me. And I laid in bed after and I went through the videos and stuff that I had taken, and I just sobbed. I really did. I sobbed. It was so special. But the day itself of going to the show was, I hope you guys are proud of me, because you guys know I can be a bit of a princess at times. And I was a little bit of a princess on this trip. I'll fully admit it. I overdid it the first night, and I laid in bed the second day and was like, I'm not doing anything. I feel like ass right now.
We weren't sure when we thought you were going to call us at 6 a.m.
Yeah,
our time, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're thinking, well, where's Woods?
Shaking.
Is he okay?
Well, there's a combo of massive jet lag and 30 Guinness does not equal up to feeling great. And so it was fine. Like I texted my buddy Craig. I go, bro, I'm sorry. I'm laying in bed. I'm done for. He's like, dude, no problem. He went out and toured some stuff. And then we met up later and went out, and it was fine. But that day, we planned it out. And so we had heard that if you got there early. So let me explain how it goes. There's the big stage. There's the front standing. That's VIP front standing. Then there's the second corral that's also VIP. but it's not front standing.
It's like a rainbow going out
like
from the inner to the second rainbow to the third rainbow.
It's like three corrals, right? So VIP, still VIP, and then general admission. We had back of the thing general admission, but we had read online that if you get there early, they will upgrade you. If you're one of the first 1,000 people in line, they'll upgrade you. So Craig's like, I need to be upgraded. I said, bro, me too. I didn't fly all this way to be standing back, way back in the back, like looking at a screen. So, man, the doors opened at 2. We were there at 11 a.m. And we were standing along this cobblestone street in near Heaton Park. And it's an old-ass town. I mean, there's the Ostrich Pub across the street. There was it was desolate. And we're standing there, and it's raining. And we're in full gear. I got my poncho on the whole bit. And we just stand there, and we wait, and we wait, and we wait. And then they move us to another queue. And then we wait in that queue for a while, and the rain is still coming. And you're like, all right. And yeah, I asked the security guys, hey, man, I've heard this rumor. They upgrade. He's like, it's all BS. And I'm like, you're kidding. So I'm here this early for nothing. He's like, yeah, pretty much. And I go, oh, great. And so we get into, they finally open the doors to Heaton Park at 2. And you can run up to the, you know, into your spot in GA. And, man, I'll tell you, people were, they were dead sprint screaming. We kind of casually walked up. And I looked at where we were, and I said to Craig, I go, this isn't going to do. We're too far. We're too far away. So I walk up to the railing, and I look at this. I find there's all these security guards. I find one girl, and she's looking at me, and I'm looking at her, and I walk up. I go, how do I get up there? And she goes, I already handed out all the upgrades, I guess. And I go, how do I get up there? And she goes, 50 quid each. And I go, done. I get Craig. I pull him over. Slip her 100 pounds, which is the same as a quid. I don't know why they say different.
So I give
slang. Her, yeah, I give her 100 quid. She goes, all right, follow me. Walks us down this rail, looks around, slides us into the VIP. Now, mind you, we have no wristband, but we are in the VIP. But we are not in the front VIP because they are checking wristbands there. They're not checking wristbands in the second corral. So we're in the second corral. So finally, we're shooting the breeze with these security guards. They drop the rope. We run up. We get on the railing in the second corral, super close, dead center, exactly what we need.
Did it sink in yet? Because the first thing I'm thinking of already, knowing that everybody else has a wristband and you don't, you're not leaving.
So that's the thing.
No bathroom, no drinks, no food.
There's no food, there's no pee-pee, there's no beer.
Because they will ask for the wristband on the way back in.
So Craig actually went out to go to the bathroom at one point and got chased back in. stop! And he's ducking, he's taking his bucket hat off, he's running, he's ducking. I did not move. You guys know me. I pee every 30 minutes. I did not urinate from 11:30 in the morning until 11:30 at night. Oh. I took a 6-minute pee.
So you're telling me it's possible?
It's possible
that we can drive to Phoenix in 5 hours.
Don't have to stop 4 times
without stopping 4 times.
Paulie, I trained my brain like a Navy SEAL to not think about it. I had a big squirt bottle of water. I would do this one little just to satisfy the dryness of it. I would go right.
All right, let me ask you this: did you wear a diaper?
I didn't.
Did you think about wearing a diaper?
I thought about peeing my pants. I thought at this point, now the rain, had it been torrential downpour, I just would have peed my pants. I wouldn't have even thought twice about it because we were
number one.
So we were on the rail. The security guards were right in front of us. They had the little holes. So they would have seen my wiener into a cup if I had decided to just do it. They would have seen me pee and they would have kicked me out. So I'm like, I'm just not going to pee. And I'm not moving.
Wow.
So this is where it gets really good. So we're standing there, no wristband, and I'm like, I'm here. This is my spot. I'm going to be here. And then I started to panic because I asked people like, hey, what time does the first band cast? What time do they come on? They're like, 6. I'm like, it's 2:30. I'm like, I'm going to be here for 3.5 hours doing nothing, standing here. So I started to panic, dude. I was like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? I go, don't look at your watch. Don't look at your watch. I'd look. 3 minutes has passed. I'm like.
That was like our flight to Philadelphia.
Yeah,
but there's no entertainment.
That's
there's
right.
No nothing.
You stand there.
Mm-hmm. At all.
You just stand there. So I'm panicked. And I'm like, this is going to take forever. Like, this is, we're never, it's never going to get here. So all of a sudden, I hear Craig talking to this guy, and I look over, and he's like, hey, Woodsy, this is Tony. And I meet this guy who I think is, he's right out of a Jack Kerouac book. He is one of the most interesting, fascinating human beings I've ever met. I'm borderline obsessed with this dude. I love this guy. We met, we started talking about how much we love the band. And, you know, talking to each other just to pass the time. And he's like, hey, man, I came by myself. Can I hang out with you guys? I go, you're in, dude. So it was the three of us. And this guy must have had, I'd say he had about 14 beers in the time we were standing there together. Didn't, was not fazed. He's Australian. Like, that's what they do. So it starts to get buzzy. You know, we're getting close. And I look over and he's making this video into his phone. Aussie Tony. And I go, what is he doing? So he sent me the video.
Content creator?
Yeah, I thought he was a content creator. Turns out he's a pit boss at a casino in Melbourne,
that's
Australia.
Badass.
So he's went to three Manchester shows. He's in London now waiting for them to go on in London in a few days. He may come to L.A. to see them. But we started shooting the breeze, so he makes this video. And I go, wait, who's that for? He goes, oh, I just make this for my mates. I send these to my mates. And I go, so he sent it to me. Listen to this dude.
Yeah, one second.
Paulie's got it.
Pull it up. All right, let's roll, baby. Welcome, everyone, to the Tony Gatsby Oasis Experience. Coming to life from Manchester in the United Kingdom, I am the Mediterranean heartthrob, the bronze Maltese Adonis, the high seat urban cowboy, the big dog, and Mr. Big Deal. And I'm here for night four of the Gallagher's homecoming gigs. This is 4 or 5. Everyone's excited. Let me hear you say it. What a time to be alive.
So he makes these for his friends. His friends don't like Oasis. They couldn't care less. He's like, so I thought he was like making videos to give out like Aussie rules football picks. I was waiting to be like, okay, today you're going to take Queensland +1.5. It was like, he sounded like literally a guy that was making picks. So, man, we just totally bonded and connected.
Now,
with
did
this
he
guy.
Have a wristband? Could he get out and back in?
Yeah, he was good. So
did he help you out a little bit?
He went and got he got waters and stuff for
coming alive for Manchester in the United Kingdom.
He had this incredible zeal for life, and I wanted to absorb some of it. And then this is the best, dude. So the band comes on. It was amazing. I mean, it was amazing. They sounded so good. The brothers walk out arm in arm. And, everyone's in tears. And we're singing all these songs. So about the third song in, everyone's in tears. And we're singing and all holding hands and swaying back and forth. So we'd all, like, shake our head when it was over. And he'd look at me. And he did this after. He's pretty hammered at this point. He'd go, when are they going to play one of the good ones? Like that. He did it after every song. So they would play a huge hit. Everyone would sing it to me. And I'd go, wow. And he'd go, well, I got to play one of the good ones. And he did it after every song. Then in the end, he goes, too many B-sides for me. And I was dying. So after the thing, he's like, hey, I've got a cab driver. He's been on my payroll all week. He's financing his trip, by the way. Going to English casinos and winning like $1,200 at poker. And then that's how he's like paying for this trip.
Crazy.
He was amazing. And then he's like, hey, my mate's here. We're going to go out. And I go, I can't go out, dude. It's been a 12-hour day. I'm going back to the room.
You know what would happen if you went out with this guy.
I'd still be awake. I bet. Honestly, I'd still be in Manchester. I would have missed my flight. The guy's a lunatic. He was so rad. Got us home in a cab. Next morning, he's like, what are you doing, mate? I'm going to come by for some coffee. So he comes by, and we shoot the breeze. We have breakfast together and have some coffee and and say goodbye. And again, he may come out for the L.A. show. And I said,
Aussie
bro,
Tony,
if you come out for the L.A. show, come to San Diego first. We'll go to a Pods game.
Come in studio.
Yeah. He was the best, dude. He was the best. But honestly, man, it was such an incredible trip. And then, you know, obviously it being my birthday, the very end, Champagne Supernova is the last song. And they rip off a 2-minute fireworks show at the end. That just the whole place. I'll tell you, seeing all those people together, happy. I was like, all right, I have a lot more hope than I used to. I really did. I came home with a new feeling about humanity in general. And the coolest thing happened. It was the last three songs, which were Don't Look Back in Anger, Wonderwall, and Champagne Supernova. And this little kid, he's about 13, kind of worked his way up front. His dad taps me on the shoulder. He goes, mate, do you mind if he gets on the rail? And I said, not at all. I said, get him up on the rail. So he's watching Wonderwall with us, and we're swaying. And then I look back, and the dad goes, thank you so much. I go, dude, get up here. Because dad was about 3 feet tall. I go, get up. And we're all huge in front of him. I go, get up here. Arm in arm, rocking back and forth together, singing. Ugh, it's choking me up. It was the sweetest, best thing. They were hugging each other. He goes, you have no idea how much this means to me. Thank you so much. I go, dude, I've had 2 hours here. Like, this is for you guys. It was beautiful. The whole thing was beautiful. It was the longest day of my life. I mean, 12 hours out there, like, on your feet. It was pretty nuts, but I did it, dude. I did it, and we crushed it, and it was so much fun.
I loved what you said. You called me yesterday, and we're kind of saying the same thing. You told me the story about the kid and his dad, and you're just like, man, looking around the concert venue, everybody around me, you saw so many dads.
Yeah.
Guys in their 40s, 50s that grew up with Oasis.
Played it for their kids.
And now had children, played it for them, but you're like, sorry, you're never going to get to experience this music live.
You'll never see these guys live.
It's not going to happen.
And now to see it, and when they walked on stage in their hometown, 80,000 people just, it was so badass, man. So they sounded great. I had no disappointment, not even one tiny little disappointment about the trip at all. It was long. I mean, it was certainly long, but it was so worth it.
So you're saying that if I had gone with you.
Yeah.
I would have waited 11 hours and 45 minutes before hearing the two songs that I actually know.
Correct.
By Oasis.
Yeah. Okay. You would have seen the last three songs. You would have been like, all right, I know these. But, dude, it was – I mean, I did. I cried 15 times at that show. Man, I just would wipe my eyes and be like, I can't believe I'm here. It was so cool, so special. But yeah, hey, when are they going to play one of their good ones? It was hammered. And it was like, you've told this joke 25 times, dude. He was a legend. I will love this guy forever, and I hope we stay in touch because he's incredible. I mean, when you meet him, you're like, dude, he just has it. You know, he's got that thing, and it was so much fun. It was so, so much fun.
Well, I want to meet Tony. I am glad you had such a spectacular time. I'm sure there's probably some more details. We'll hear about the food coming up a little bit later.
Food was something.
let's take our first time out this morning, get a check of traffic, and then we can come back, set the menu, and get into some Padres baseball because while you've been gone, this team's been playing pretty, pretty nicely.
Put it this way. I had a lot of tweets telling me to stay in the UK because they were winning, and I came home and they won yesterday.
So you feel good about that.
So I feel really good. The curse is over. The perceived curse is not a thing.
All right, we'll get into our wrap-up. Last night's 2-1 win over the Miami Marlins and more. We got Woods back. Thank you for my
your hat.
Thoughtful and lovely gift.
It looks so good on you.
It does.
You should wear that everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's like golfing.
Should. I should wear it on TV tonight.
Where should?
Yeah, they're going to love that.
Yeah, it looks really
Channel
good
10.
On you.
I'm sure they will. Kelly's Traffic, then we'll come back with Ben and Woods and Paul on a Tuesday morning on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fam.
Well, I was just telling you guys about the water in the UK, and it's certainly no eco water, mostly because it's hot and it doesn't taste very good. Eco water. Getting back yesterday, my wife had my Eco water jug cleaned out for me, filled up, and in the fridge, just like I like it. I was so happy to get back. They've been keeping water soft since 1925. Check them out. Give them a call. They'll do a free in-home water test. They'll test the water that you're currently, you know, using to bathe in and, you know, giving your pets and wash your food and your fruit in. It's not good. Okay. The in-home water test will actually blow your mind. So try the Soft Life and alkaline water now, just $9.95 a month. By calling 760-350-3338 or go to ecowatersocal.com. Let them know Woodsy sent you over there because not everything in life should be hard, especially your water. They've been keeping it soft since 1925. Again, call 760-350-3338 or go to ecowatersocal.com. Eco Water, your water should be perfect.
I kind of had an interesting day yesterday. Welcome back. We got Woods back. Just heard all kinds of stories from his trip to Manchester, England to see Oasis. Get to the Padres wrap-up just a second here. But, yeah, I did a story for Channel 10 on the NASCAR race that's coming to San Diego. I think it's going to be announced tomorrow is what I've heard. Talked to some sources, And they're going to race it on the North Island Naval Air Station base out there on the end of Coronado. So I needed to go get some video. So I went to the gate, but you can't really see anything.
Yeah,
so
right?
I thought, all right, I need to go find somewhere where I can actually kind of get a shot of North Island. So I kind of drove out randomly past the airport, Point Loma, down Rosecrans, all the way to the end. And I've never really gone all the way out there. I've gone to the lighthouse. I've gone to the cemetery. But I went to this neighborhood that has perhaps the most spectacular views I've ever seen in Point Loma.
I think I know exactly where you're talking about.
Harbor View Drive. And it looks back over Coronado, downtown, all the way down to, like, Mexico. You can, like, see the sunrise to the east.
Were you down, like, more on the sea level, or did you go up the hill?
I went up the hill so I could get some shots. And
beautiful.
There was, like, some neighbors walking their dogs, and I go, this is amazing. She goes, yeah, this is, like, San Diego's secret here. Because you can't really, it's not, there's no main streets that get there. It's all, like, dead ends. There's no parks or shops or businesses. So you'd never really go there unless you, like, knew someone and you were going to their house.
Right.
But it was just really cool to see. So I did that story and gave our friend Italian Paul, Frank Marchese, a little star turn. I interviewed him about NASCAR and motorsports for the story.
He's the biggest NASCAR fan I know.
He is huge into NASCAR.
No, he was huge, and then he lost
he got all the weight. But he's still huge into auto racing, Formula One, and NASCAR. And I think it's going to be a big event. I don't know all the details. I think we're going to hear more tomorrow about it's going to be Father's Day weekend next year. And for at least 3 years, they're going to do it. But unlike Chicago, which is the race it's replacing, they're not going to have to close down all the streets because they're doing it on the base, and, you know, the tarmac, and they can set it up out there. They got all kinds of space on Coronado. But visually, with the bay and the bridge and Point Loma and the skyline, it's going to be spectacular.
I mean, it's like any sporting event they do here is spectacular. I mean, people know that across the country. Like, oh, you're doing that in San Diego. It makes perfect sense. We should have more. The All-Star Game should be here every single year. I mean, it's a perfect place to host these things. But I think that's great. I mean, I'm not the world's biggest NASCAR fan by any stretch, but what's good for our city, I'm fully in favor of. You will not hear me, slagging it off, as they say in England.
And Frank made the good point that there's no more races in Southern California because the Fontana Speedway closed.
Right.
All those fans who've been like looking, you know, used to go every single year, we'll get fans from L.A., Inland Empire, Arizona, you know, Central California. They'll all drive down and want to check out the race. So it should be a good tourist attraction as well for San Diego.
So is it done? It's done?
It hasn't been announced, but my sources say should be tomorrow morning. NASCAR is going to make an official announcement.
Very cool.
All right, here's what we got coming up on the program today. We'll get into the Padres highlights with Jesse and Tony from Miami after a quick check of traffic. Also coming up, our regular segments like Don't Do This, Take on Woods with Woods back. John tied yesterday?
Tied.
No, he won. He won 4-3. Just barely snuck it out
yesterday,
filling in for you. And it's an Incorporator Tuesday. We will welcome Jesse Agler, who is back home in Miami this week, his hometown where he grew up, and he'll join us at 8:35 to talk Padres baseball and play the Incorporator with us.
So, he said it was ungodly hot.
Yeah,
I was listening to the broadcast.
It's supposed to be even hotter in St. Louis when they go this weekend.
Ooh, right when I got in, put on the radio, it was like, oh, it was so good to be home. Jesse was starting the game, and he goes, it's immeasurably hot outside.
I was looking at their schedule, and when I saw they had St. Louis coming up this weekend on the road, I was reminded. It's corn sweat and sizzling.
Oh, corn sweat.
Remember
that's
the
corn right.
Sweat?
I remember corn sweat.
Gonna get hot. Gonna get hot this weekend in St. Louis. But first, we'll talk about last night's win and why I think it was one of the sneaky better wins of the season for the San Diego Padres. Some people will go, what, 2-1? Marlins, they're no good. What are you talking about?
Oh.
It was a good win last night for your San Diego Padres. We'll get into it after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
I love winning, man. You hear what I'm saying? It's like better than losing.
Miss any of the Padres' win yesterday? Ben and Woods didn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got you covered with all of the highlights.
Oh, yes.
It's the
Padres wrap-up.
Brought to you by Hamul Casino Resort. Things are about to get real with the all-new Hamul Casino Resort. With gorgeous rooms and exciting new eats and drinks. It gets real this summer at Hamul Casino Resort, the player's place.
I want to go fast, but I want to go slow, and I want to go deep. And Merrill hits it on a line out to right field. That is down at a base hit. Bogarts will come in to score. Jackson Merrill, an RBI single, as the Padres take a 1-0 lead here in the second. 2-1, hit hard on a line. That's a fair ball up the third baseline, headed towards the left field corner. Merrill's on his horse. He's at third. Stowers gets to it. Leaper going to hold him. Going to run through the stop sign. Relay to the plate. Not in time, and it gets away. Merrill ran right through the stop sign and comes in to score. Martin Maldonado in a guy double, and a 2-0 Padre lead in the second. And that's line right to Manny. He's got it. Fires to second in time, and a double play as they double off Sanchez to end the inning. And Stowers in the air to deep left center field. Jackson Merrill's racing back onto the warning track. In front of the big wall there, he can't get it, and it's gone, a home run. Oh boy, Kyle Stowers, 22nd of the year. One of the absolute hottest hitters on the planet. And he gets the fish on the board, it's 2-1. First pitch coming, not running, and a ground ball sharply to Xander. He's got it, little overhand flip to Iglesias in time for the force, and the ball game is over. Robert Suarez does it again in a one-run game as the Pods take game one of this series by a final score of 2-1.
I don't know where to start. The pitching probably deserves a lot of it, but a lot of tough at-bats. It's a tough righty. Vasquez was good. Played a little frogger again, a little dodgeball, but was able to get through it. You know, Stowers put a swing on him, but, we were in a position with the rest we've had, the luxury of being able to get a lead and win a game and, some more homers, throwing 5 pitches in 5 days, and we can't do that a lot. But today presented the opportunity to go grab Sanchez with one out in the fifth, and he was able to eliminate those two guys and get a clean sixth, and then very efficient doing it. And of course, Estrada very efficient, had him erase the leadoff infield hit that Manny made a heck of a play on to make it close, but got the double play ball, and of course Suarez 1-2-3 brought it home.
I mean, fantastic work from the bullpen. Again, it's the formula that has worked more often than not for the San Diego Padres this year. And, I did see people very upset again with the quick hook on Randy Vasquez. But when you have a blowout the night before and the offense does what it's supposed to do and those guys are sitting there, I don't know how, you sitting at home or me sitting at home could question, I'm going Morahone. I'm going Estrada. I'm going Adam, and I'm going Suarez, and I'm going to get this win. And they drew it up, and it worked perfectly. And I know, again, you can't do it every day, but again, the night before, Nicky P, pitching as well as he did, and the offense coming through, why not? That's how you got that win last night.
Incredibly efficient work by the bullpen.
Brilliant.
As well.
Yeah.
Adrian Morihone got 5 outs in 19 pitches.
Crazy.
Including 2 strikeouts. Jeremiah Estrada got 3 outs in 12 pitches. Jason Adam got 3 outs in 6 pitches, thanks to the double play. And Robert Suarez got 3 outs in 10 pitches. So, other than probably Morihone, 3 of those guys are still available today as well. And they hadn't worked really at all other than the All-Star game. And that one couple of guys worked in the one game in the first series after the break. So, I think, Mike Schilt wanted to get those guys some work, get them back out there. And Randy did his job in the game yesterday. And I even mentioned on the show, watch out for the Miami Marlins.
Yeah,
and
I actually didn't
even realize how hot they were. When they put the graphic up on the teams with the best records in baseball over like the last month, Marlins had like the 3rd best record in baseball. And I knew, I talked a little bit with Paulie about how good Eury Pérez has been. He had given up 1 run in the entire month of July.
Nasty.
In 3 starts. So you may say, Padres offense not getting the job done again. 2 runs off of that guy, not bad. That was the formula for winning the game. We talked about it on the show. Keep it close, within a run somewhere, give it to your bullpen. Now, I was impressed by the Marlins bullpen guys. Those guys that came in at the end, Simpson and Phillips, and both pitched 2 shutout innings. They were pretty nasty. I was surprised by that. I thought maybe the Padres could add on late, but that was the only thing that really disappointed me. Otherwise, really good game. I mean, you kind of dodged some landmines with some infield singles. Umpire Adrian Johnson was terrible.
He's terrible.
I mean, both ways, but I thought, I'll see the umpire scorecard later this morning. My guess is most of the blown calls favored the Marlins in that game yesterday on pitches that were not called on the edge, that were called off the edge, just constant all game long.
I was surprised to hear Manny Machado's comments about how he's not in favor of the ABS challenge.
System, yeah.
He said, I'm old school, I like the human element. And I'm like, oh, You would have had a not strikeout if the ABS existed, because that ball was well down. He didn't argue. He did not argue. He just kind of took his medicine and walked back to the dugout. But I thought, you know, when a Randy Vasquez start is getting national attention from our friends Cespedes Family Barbecue, I go, well, that's interesting. They tweeted, Randy Vasquez running through a rainstorm, dry as a bone, no K's, no problems. What a hero. The paragraph that they quoted was from A.J. Cassavell. But yeah, 4 1/3 innings, one run ball, lowering his ERA to 3.73. Did not record a strikeout. He definitely worked around some traffic, turned the ball over to the lights out back end of the bullpen, the four horsemen, as it were.
Of course, the key moment that everyone wanted to talk about after the game was Jackson Merrill running through Tim Leaper's stop sign there in the second inning on Martin Maldonado's double down the line and scoring from first base with what turned out to be the decisive run in the game. And I agree with a lot of the fans out there. Tim Leaper's had some, you know, less than perfect moments as third base coach, as every third base coach does.
We see it because we're in the vacuum, you know, we're in the vacuum. So that's our, I see Dodger fans complaining about Dino Ebel all the time. I mean, it's sometimes you just, sometimes as a player, Ben, you know, Jackson said it after the game. He goes, if the ball goes to the wall, I got to score from first base. That's just in his head. And
I loved what he said. Tony, he said, yeah, on this team, we score from first base.
We score from first base.
Two outs on this team is what we do.
That's what we do.
He also said, I was going so fast, I felt like if I stopped at that point, I wouldn't have been able to put on the brakes and get back to third.
Ripped his hamstring in half.
He made, I think, a smart decision, one that you have to be able, and Mike Schilt always talks about giving his players the authority to make their own choices. Yeah, the base coach is there for a reason, and you should probably heed the base coach.
It's just a suggestion.
Most often, but the player
doesn't fly on my team.
The player is the only one who truly knows, and Jackson made a decision for himself, and it turned out to be the right decision. Now, for everyone who's saying, you know, Tim Leaper is an idiot, why do you put up the stop sign? I don't know, with Fernando Tatis Jr. coming up on deck, I can see the idea of, I do not want to get our third out at home plate here and not give, you know, Tatis an opportunity to come in and drive in two or three with one swing of the bat. That would have been the biggest possible mistake you could have made in that situation.
A couple of points here that are great. Beatrice says, hot take. He's Tim Leaper's better than Matt Williams. That is not even a hot take. You are 1,000,000,000% right. Matt Williams was not great as a third base coach. Tim Leaper has his moments, certainly, but it's a tough job, as we've heard many, many times from our buddy Tim Flannery. He goes, Woodsy, it is the most thankless job in Major League Baseball. It is really, really tough. And all these decisions have to be made lightning fast. Now, here's the thing. He has sent Martin Maldonado like four times when he should have held him, and he holds up Jackson Merrill when he should have sent him. And listen, I all these points are very, very valid as it pertains to Tim Leaper. But again, I do sympathize, because it is a crap job. That's why I make Paulie do it on the tier ones. I'm never at third base, right, Paulie? Ever.
Never.
I'm always at first.
Unless
we're on the third base side, I might. You will not see me running over there to wave guys in. It is really a thankless job. But Jackson took it upon himself, and thank God he did. Scored that run. Went ahead. You know, it turned out to be the winning run.
Good to see him back in the lineup after he missed Sunday's game due to illness.
Boy, he didn't look good after that game.
Glad to be. He was definitely, you know how you feel like day after, you're kind of still getting over it.
I feel like that right now.
I'm sure you
I feel
do.
Like that
I'm
right
sure
now.
You do.
Yeah, jet lag is real.
But, you know, Jackson Merrill stuck it out, stayed in there even at the end of the game when they replaced Gavin Sheets for defensive purposes. Padres got the win and once again added to their lead in the wild card race. They've gone from a half game up when the second half started on Friday, and now are 3.5 games up on both the San Francisco Giants. Well, actually, all three teams. The San Francisco Giants, the Cincinnati Reds, and the St. Louis Cardinals are all 3.5 games back in the wild card race. So you know how fast three games can go. I mean, you know, the Padres built it up in 4 days. You could lose it in just as quickly. But on the other end, the Padres are also just 3.5 games behind the Los Angeles Dodgers in the NL West. And it was nearly 2.5 last night as the Dodgers took on the Twins and almost blew it at the end of the game. Shohei Ohtani started, got his 35th home run of the season after giving up one to Byron Buxton in the first inning.
First homer given up as a Dodger. because Byron Buxton got him.
But then he got one back in the bottom of the first. And
what a luxury to have. You give up one and can hit one.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, he's the only guy who can really do that.
That's it.
But in the end, the Dodgers had a 5-1 lead in the ninth. Tanner Scott, though, ran into problems and then came up, looked like a hamstring injury. Dave Roberts says he believes Tanner Scott will be headed to the IL today. So another pitching injury. Former Padre Kirby Yates comes in, gets two outs after a sac fly. So it's 5-2, tying run at the plate.
Correa.
Carlos Correa smashes one to center field. Looks like he's tied the game. Outman goes back, jumps at the wall. This, I don't think it would have gone over, but it was right away from a game-time three-run home run. But the Dodgers do finally get their first win of the second half of the season, 5-2.
Yeah, it was fun being over in the UK watching Dodger fans just melt down from afar. It was really, really fun. I enjoyed that very much. Now, I did come home. The Padres won, so I'm alleviated from that curse, but maybe me coming home has helped the Dodgers win. And we talked a couple of weeks ago, Benjamin, about let yourself believe, you know, let yourself believe that they could absolutely slip because they have not looked great.
Now, we talked about that a little bit yesterday, the other side of it. We said we just had the conversation. 3.5 games back.
Yeah.
Are you letting yourself start to go there?
Well, I mean, I'm certainly perusing and poring over the standings and the game logs and letting myself think, you know, why not, man? Why not?
If they stay between 2 and 4 games, they got, 6 games in, 7 days against this team in a couple of weeks here?
Yeah, I mean, they don't look great right now. They got a lot of stuff to figure out. Now, again, you do get the sense that team is a team that can start it up on a dime. They're not getting good performances from some guys that they typically do. And if those guys start to figure it out, sure, they're going to end up being the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah,
Mookie
Betts got benched for a day over the weekend. He's been struggling so badly. Blake Snell is getting close to a return. Blake Treinen's coming back. They got Tyler Glasnow back earlier this week.
Yeah, so they're going to go out and make moves, too, at the deadline. So, with Tanner Scott being down, you know, it forces them to have to get some back-end help of the bullpen. Now, again, Treinen will be back. He's as nasty as it gets at the back end of a bullpen. But, you know, they're talking about the guy from Minnesota, Johan Duran, who would be ridiculous there. But, yeah, it's going to cost them a fortune to get it. But they have it. They have it. They have money that they have prospect capital that they can use. No problem. Will Andrew Friedman actually cough it up at the deadline? We'll see.
We also saw the Padres interested in bullpen help, according to John Heyman yesterday.
I did not see that.
He tweeted. You retweeted. Or no, you didn't retweet it. But I saw John Heyman tweeted, Padres reportedly shopping for more bullpen help, which,
great.
I mean, you're never surprised when AJ is looking into adding. I'm sure someone talked to a GM and said, yeah, AJ was asking about this reliever so-and-so. Doesn't surprise me that AJ's asking about it. I still think, obviously, offense has to be the priority for the Padres and what they're picking up here at the trade deadline. But don't be stunned if one of those trades also comes with another bullpen piece to add a little bit more depth to the to the pen going down the stretch, because you never know who you're going to need. After the trade deadline, you're stuck.
You've got your team. Yeah.
So you've got to also anticipate, well, if we lose one or two guys here or there, what do we have in reserve? So you have to plan for it, because there's not many moves that can be made once August 1st rolls around.
Yeah, no doubt, man. No doubt. And I'm, obviously we are all on pins and needles waiting for that trade deadline acquisition or two. Certainly there's a lot to be, there's a lot to have consternation about, absolutely, because when's the last impact bat you've brought in that did anything other than Juan Soto? You know, Luis Arraez, I think, but he was not a deadline deal. But yeah, man, you know, this team needs some offensive help. It's out there. What do we have to give? These are all the burning questions right now.
All right, we will talk more Padres baseball coming up in hour number two, including, I think, the big favor that, Clayton McCullough, he's the manager of the Marlins right now, former Dodgers coach. The giant favor he did for the San Diego Padres in yesterday's game that helped the Padres actually win the game. I don't know what he's thinking, but hey, well, we'll take it. Plus, we're going to give away, as I promised yesterday, some early Padres-Mets tickets for the next homestand, the Sandless Beach-style game next Tuesday, 1 week from today. We'll do that when we come back as well. And then later, Jesse Agler, the Incorporator, and more with Ben Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.